The Los Angeles Dodgers took the series finale against the Diamondbacks on Monday, maybe answering a lot of the questions we had about the postseason viability of this roster. Let's break down that and more on today's First Pitch. Yes, welcome on into First Pitch for Tuesday, September 3rd. I'm Lindsey Crosby. He's Christian Rau. And Christian, lots of baseball on Monday. Wasn't a full slate, but still lots of games. Don't quite know why it wasn't a full slate, because it was a holiday. Feels like maybe that's something you should do if you're Major League Baseball. But either way, the biggest game to me, the one that I enjoyed watching the most, I think, was the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks wrapping up their series finale. Dodgers were up 2-1 in the series entering Monday's finale, the wraparound series there. And 11-6 Dodgers win, and it kind of feels like almost everything went LA's way, right? We had questions last week about the postseason rotation for the Dodgers. Jack Flaherty, 5 2/3 innings, 5 hits, 1 run, 3 walks to 7 strikeouts. Doesn't get out of the 6th, but pitch count-wise, absolutely could have. Not a big issue there. Shohei Ohtani goes 2 for 4. Scores twice, walks twice, steals 3 bases. So 44 homers, 46 stolen bases. And flip side, Arizona really struggles. Eduardo Rodriguez, abbreviated start, takes 92 pitches to get through 4 innings with 3 runs allowed on 7 hits, only strikes out 1. Jordan Montgomery, Slade Cecconi both get demolished in relief, combined 8 runs in 3 2/3 innings. Let's stick with the Dodgers first. Are you now comfortable in saying if you get one of those top of the rotation pitchers back in either Glasnow or Yamamoto, that you now look like you have a postseason rotation that you can trust? Do you have 3 or 4 starters that you can trust for the postseason, seeing what Flaherty did yesterday against a good Diamondbacks team?
3 or 4 still might be a stretch. It might still be a stretch, but I don't know if they need 3 or 4. Lindsey, if based on this offense, if you just get 2 or 3 and really just 2 in a stronger bullpen, you might be okay. As we mentioned, you win 66% of your games, you're gonna win World Series. So I don't know if I'm okay with 3 or 4 yet. I think you got to give me another week. I want to see Yamamoto start in the majors to really get that decision, because I think he's going to be the next one. I don't think it's going to be Glasnow. I think we're going to see Yamamoto first, because he was doing his AAA rehabs. So I want to see one more of him before I can really say, okay, I think they have a full rotation. These guys are ready to go. But this offense is crazy. And you mentioned Shohei Ohtani. Are you kidding me, man? Like, he's going to hit 50-50. Like, we weren't sure if that was going to happen. Now it seems almost like a sure thing.
Yeah, he got 40-40 10 days ago. And since then, he's now at 44-46. Obviously, he had those 3 stolen bases. 2 of those were back-to-back. Like, he went after that quickly. And so, in August, he hit 12 homers, stole 15 bases. 50-50, I think 50-50 feels inevitable. And we had the question when the show first started. We asked, is it worth maybe having Shohei Ohtani not be a starter next year? Because I think the dimension that you lose with Shohei Ohtani being a starter is the stolen bases. Now, obviously, if he is the Shohei Ohtani that you got last season, right, that frontline starting pitcher, it's absolutely worth sacrificing the stolen bases. But if he is, let's say, a number 3 starter, For this Dodgers squad, a squad that has 10 different starting pitchers, they just have to find some healthy ones. I'm assuming it's still worth giving up the dimension of stolen bases to get that Shohei Ohtani, right?
I think so. Yeah, and I was more leaning on the other side when we had this conversation the first time around, but I think now that we've seen the inconsistency, which is wild to say, of these Dodgers pitchers, because the names that they've had has just been so wild, but it's been inconsistent, mostly because of injuries. Because of that, I do think that Ohtani needs to be back on the mound. And I don't think they'll rush him, which is a good thing because they should not rush him. I know that he's already throwing off the mound. I don't think we will see him throw this season. But I do think when he's ready, I think we will see him back to being that two-way player, which is, it's good for the game too. Like MLB might make a rule that says Shohei Ohtani has to stay in either, you know, pitching and batting because it's just so good for the game. But now all jokes aside, I do think that we need to get him back on the mound, and you know, as long as they don't rush him back to it, I think that's going to be a good thing for the Dodgers, MLB, and for Shohei Ohtani. And you know what? As much as I love seeing those stolen bases, Lindsay, from Shohei Ohtani, I think I'd rather see some swords and some strikeouts from him.
Yeah. And, you know, and proving that proving that I can own up to being wrong, I went and looked his 2021 MVP season, the first one he won in LA with the Angels. He was 26 of 36 on stolen bases. So he did steal 26 bags despite also being a starter and putting up an ERA that was, I believe, just over 3 that year. Let me see. Yeah, he had a 3.18 ERA in 130 innings that year, made 23 starts. And so, you know, okay, I can totally own up to like, yeah, no, he can do both. This, does he hit 50 again? Probably not, but I mean, it looks like he could be a 20, 25, maybe 30 stolen base guy while starting, because he did it in 21. He stole 26 of 36. He was caught 10 times, which led the American League, led all of baseball, by the way. His 10 caught stealings led all of baseball in 21. He's been caught 4 times this year. So he's learned a lot better how to pick and choose his moments.
You know, I saw a stat that went around social media a couple days ago, and I'm not sure how accurate it is. I'm sure it's pretty good, but it is as amazing and exciting and the Ohtani season has been, it's only the 12th best season of Barry Bonds' career.
Just the historical comparisons are great. We'll have that debate one day about peak Shohei Ohtani versus Barry Bonds and see what we get there. So yeah, 6 homers left, 4 stolen bases left to hit 50-50. They've got 24 games before the postseason. Today, on Tuesday, this is Shohei Ohtani's first game back at Angel Stadium since he left them via free agency. So gonna be fun to kind of tune in to see the reception he gets and how that game goes and how dominant he might be against his former team.
I think that it's gonna be, you might be surprised about what the reaction is. I was at the Angels home opener this season, and they had like a whole video thing, and Shohei was on it, obviously, because he won MVP. The crowd booed very hard. So I'm also interested to see if he'll get a standing ovation, which he should, but it wasn't that case at the home opener this year.
That is tough. That is very tough. Flip side of this game, looking at Arizona, we kind of mentioned the pitching issues. Eduardo Rodriguez had an inefficient start, took the loss. Montgomery and Sassoni both getting blown up. There is some hope for this team because they got some guys coming back from injury. Ketel Marte out with that ankle sprain. He's expected back this week. But also Christian Walker, and I think I missed this, out since July 29th with that oblique issue. He played 5 innings in a game setting at the spring training facility on Saturday and then took ground balls at Chase Field on Sunday. So the expectation is he might get activated this week during the road trip as well. So getting Ketel Marte back, getting Christian Walker back. Gabriel Moreno played in the game. He didn't run though. So he was at the spring training facility. Again, played in that game environment thing that they did those inter squad games there since rookie ball was done, but again, did not run. He was doing catching drills. He was squatting. So he seems to be closer to getting back. I think this could be something where you could see him back before September's over. Even if they lose Lourdes Gurriel, who's day to day with calf tightness, MRI was scheduled for, they were trying to get one on the holiday yesterday. It feels like these injuries are going to be enough to keep the offense humming, but can the Diamondbacks offense do enough to make up for just the complete lack of consistency from non-Zach Gallen in the rotation?
Yeah, that's where I'm at too. I think that's the right answer there. Offense doesn't seem to be a problem. It seems to be, can this rotation hold up? And I think you got a big step back with the start yesterday with Rodriguez. You know, you're hoping to be able to piggyback him with Montgomery after moving him to the bullpen, hoping you're going to get some sort of success there. And it falls right back in your face. It did not work. So no. I am I am concerned about the Snakes, and I've been kind of really high on them for the past couple weeks, thinking that they'd be able to stay in there. I thought they'd be able to even maybe chase the Dodgers for the NL West. That's not going to happen now since they're six and a half games back. So, yeah, I think the offense is fine. They've found ways to replace Walker, Marte, Moreno, and done just well, but the rotation is still concerning, and I don't know if there's an answer for that right now.
They were in a similar boat to the Braves, where if they wanted to take or to have a chance at taking the division, they had to go out there and go 3-1 in this 4-game series or sweep it. And instead, just like the Braves, they went 1-3. And so I think now you're kind of solidly in the wild card there. Going from a team that has that had some offensive questions to a team that has no offensive questions right now, the Milwaukee Brewers. They win 9-3 over the St. Louis Cardinals. All nine runs came off of homers. Three homers. Rhys Hoskins has one. Willy Adames has a three-run homer. Jackson Churio hits a grand slam. Well, I want to get to Churio in a second because I had a chance to actually talk to him at the winter meetings. But Willy Adames has 13 three-run homers this season, and he hit one on his birthday, which is just always kind of a little cool stat. Is Willy Adames, I think two questions. One, is there any chance the Brewers sign him to an extension before he hits free agency?
Yeah, I don't think so. No, I think that there's going to be a battle for Willy Adames now. He's having a great season. You mentioned it's his 13th three home run season. It ties an MLB single season record. He hit a home run on his birthday. His 29th home run of the season on his 29th birthday, and he's on a 5-game home run streak, Lindsay. That ties also a Brewers franchise record. So he's on a hot streak right now, and what a good time to do it if you're Willy Adames, a pending free agent heading into the offseason. The Brewers have the money to do it. Will they do it? That's the biggest question. I think the shortstop market's going to be pretty big this year. So, yeah, Willy Adames might not be a Brewer next year. But for the record, I didn't think he was going to be a Brewer all season long this year.
Yeah, I thought they were going to trade him earlier. The record that he tied, 13 three-run homers in a season, Ken Griffey Jr. So it's always nice to be in the same world, in the same realm as Ken Griffey Jr. 5 of his last 8 homers have been three-run shots. So he has as many home runs with 2 men on base this season as the Rockies and the Giants have hit as teams, and more than 5 other teams have: the Mariners, the Rays, the Pirates, the White Sox, and the Cardinals. So it's kind of awesome there. The second question, I think, is if the Brewers don't re-sign him, which we kind of expect they probably won't, does Willy Adames get more money than Francisco Lindor? Because here's my question on this. And Lindor was in a place, right, because he was traded and everything. But Francisco Lindor has been, I would argue, MVP worthy. He's not going to be the MVP this year, not in a league where Shohei Ohtani exists, but I think he's up there. He signed a 10-year, $341 million deal at the age of going into his age 28 season. Okay. Willy Adames is 29. And I think arguably he is better from a power perspective than Francisco Lindor. Defensively, he's not as good, but I think he's close. Does he make more money than Lindor?
I'm going to say no. And I think he deserves it. But when you look at the last couple shortstop free agents that were signed to pretty big contracts, Lindsay, I think teams might be gun shy. I mean, let's look at that Dansby Swanson contract. That hasn't worked out quite well. And then last year, the free agent market was a complete question mark. Disaster. What happened with Scott Boras? What happened? And people weren't signed until, you know, days into the season. So I think we're going to have a weird free agency when it comes to that side. I don't know who else is competing with Adames as the top shortstop in the free agent market. I don't think there is one. I think he will be the top guy.
He is.
And I don't know. Okay. And I don't know if there's going to be as big of a market You think the Dodgers might chase it? Maybe the Cardinals, maybe the Braves might go after something. The Cardinals aren't doing it. I don't know why I said the Cardinals, but the Rays might go after it. There's a person, you know, maybe they go and dig into the shortstop market. However, I think Willie Adames will get paid. I just don't know if it'll be as much as $300 million over a 10-year span. I don't think that AAV will cross 30, Lindsay.
Right. Those four contracts in the 23 offseason was Turner, Trey Turner, 11 years, $300 million to Philly. Xander Bogaerts, 11 years, $280 million to the Padres. Carlos Correa, 6 years, $200 million, eventually. Multiple different attempts there, yeah.
Right.
To the Twins, and then Dansby Swanson, 7 years, $177 to Chicago. I would put him, dollar-wise, I think over Correa, but probably under Bogaerts. I don't think he breaks 280 unless he goes for long, like unless he goes for over 10 years. But I could see him beating the Correa 6 for 200 or on total dollars. I don't know. I don't know if his deal will be longer or not, but I think on total dollars, you could see Willie Adames get over $200 million simply because, like you said, there are just no other good shortstops on the market this year. So I think that's
If that's the case, he will pass the 30 AAV and then he'll make me a liar, but that's okay. Good for him. But when you look at all those names you just mentioned, I mean, how many of them do you deem successful right now? A successful contract?
That's the issue. Yeah. Like looking at the available free agents, and I'm on Spot Track real quick. They've got Adames as number one, Ha-Seong Kim as number two. He'll be 29 this offseason. He has a mutual $7 million club option, mutual options are almost never picked up. Either the team thinks you're overpaid or you think you're underpaid. So after that, Kyle Farmer and combo of Miguel Rojas, Enrique Hernandez, and then Paul DeJong. Like, none of these guys are going to make remotely near what Adames is going to make. But it's Adames and Kim, and that's it, really. And Kim cannot give you nearly the offensive dimension that Adames can. So
no, Kim hasn't had the best season either. And so, Matt, maybe you're right. Maybe he will get absolutely paid just on the fact alone that there is nobody else out there. So maybe he'll get himself into a bidding war.
Yeah. If you need a shortstop that's more than a stopgap, that's it. That's your only option. So it's going to be fun to see and fun to follow that this offseason and see what happens. Okay. Another, Cleveland held off Kansas City yesterday 4-2. And flowers to Cleveland. I want to just kind of acknowledge that, hey, they are starting to find their footing again in the Central. 3.5 games up on Minnesota. Lane Thomas finally hits a home run for the first time since the trade deadline. But I want to focus on the Royals on this, right? Because the Royals have lost 6 consecutive games now. And a couple awful things happen here. Matt Quatro said that he's stepping away temporarily for personal reasons. We don't know what that is. I'm not going to ask. Not my place. When you say personal reasons, I'm going to leave it alone. Ben Hoover, the bench coach, is going to take over temporarily for him. And then Yuli Gurriel, who they just acquired from Atlanta in a minor league trade for cash considerations to replace Vinny Pascantino, who said he's supposed to have surgery this week. And in his mind, his season is not over, but broken wrist, you've not had surgery yet. It's hard for me to think you're going to be back in this month. But anyway, Yuli Gurriel re-aggravated the hamstring injury he had with Atlanta, and he left the game yesterday. Am I in danger of looking like an idiot for saying the Royals were going to win this division? Because, yeah, again, 6 straight losses. They're 3-7 in their last 10. Cleveland 6-4. They've rebounded. Am I an idiot here?
Yeah, you're an idiot. Oh, we're talking about this case with the Kansas City Royals. No, I do think I do think that you might be wrong here. And I'm shocked to say the case because of what they've added and what they've done this year. I mean, regardless of how they finish, this season's been so incredible. What they were last year to what they are this year.
They lost 100 games last year.
Right. This might be even more impressive than what the Orioles did on their swing to get to back up to the playoffs. I think this is actually more impressive. I think that they're going to be the team that misses out. Cleveland's starting to really pick it up. Their pitching's starting to look a lot better. We're starting to see their offense really shine. And then Minnesota Twins are holding on to it as well. I'm nervous about these Royals teams because that Pascantino injury is just, I think it's too much. I think it's going to be too much. And as well as Gurriel looked, I think he was the reason for all the runs yesterday for the Royals until he got hurt. And when he had that hit yesterday, it was a double that easily could have been a triple. And he was struggling to get just the second base right when he left the box. You could tell there was an issue. That was really unfortunate. Yeah, it was right hamstring, the exact same injury he was dealing with in AAA. They have noted that it's a very mild, and that's what they said in the quotes, very mild injury. So I don't know if that's just to keep optimistic views in the media or if they do intend to have him back as soon as possible. But you have to assume that even if it is very mild, it sounds like it's something that can be re-aggravated or it's going to be nagging. And if you're a 40-year-old Yuri Gurriel going against MLB pitching, when it's right in the thick of it in the playoff race, no one's, you know, taking days off here. I don't know if that you're going to get exactly what you need from him, you know, regardless of what you got in that start from or that game from him on Monday. So yes, I am very concerned for this Royals team. It's really easy for me to say that I think they're going to be out because they're on a 6-game losing streak, but I think we are going to see that, Lindsay. I think we're going to see them slide down and find their way out. They're asking for one of the other teams to take it from them.
They are. All right, let's get into quick pitch real quick. Injury concerns down the stretch. One for a team that is solidly in the postseason. One that was for a team that was hanging around that is probably in trouble now. Gerrit Cole left his start for the Yankees yesterday with the trainers. I don't believe we have an update as of first thing this morning. But obviously, if you don't have Gerrit Cole for the postseason, how hard is it for the Yankees to make a run without last year's Cy Young winner?
Oh, huge. He's got a 1.85 ERA in his last 10 starts. I mean, he's been unbelievable. So it's huge for the Yankees. I do think this is a minor injury. He got pulled in the 7th inning. So it was like towards the end of his start anyways. And it looked like he was just dealing with a possibility of a cramp. So I don't know if any of this was serious when it comes to his injury. But I do think it's worth noting because it might make him miss a start or maybe two. And we're in a tight AL East race right now. And that could be a deciding factor. It really could be. I don't know if this is going to impact the Yankees in the postseason, though, which is a good thing for this team, because you absolutely need Gerrit Cole on your roster. You need him to be your ace. We've seen it plenty of times in the past decade, and not even just when he was the Yankees, when he was with the Astros. How many times do you remember watching the World Series, Lindsay, of that Astros World Series, and they'd show Gerrit Cole in the bullpen standing there with his jacket just waiting for them to come in, right? You just knew Gerrit Cole was the answer of that entire World Series. And he's going to be probably the answer of the postseason again.
There you go. A team that is not in it, but has been fighting to try to get back in it. The Chicago Cubs are 8-2 in their last 10 games. But Justin Steele was scratched from his Tuesday start. I believe it was an elbow issue. They are only 3.5 games behind Atlanta for the final wildcard spot. We'll get to the rest of that wildcard race in a second. But with the newfound offense the Cubs have, and the fact that they have an okay schedule right now, they're playing playing the Pirates at the moment. Without Justin Steele, do they have a chance of getting back into this wild card race in the final month, or is this probably the final nail in the coffin if he can't go this year?
Yeah, that's got to be concerning if you're a Cubs fan. The offense has been great. Steele hasn't been his absolute best. He was my Cy Young, NL Cy Young prediction for the beginning of the season. He hasn't lived up to that, but he hasn't been exactly what you were asking for this season, right? But he has definitely been one of their best pitchers other than Imanaga. So I do think it's a huge deal. I'm more concerned about the long-term effects of this. You're talking about elbow soreness in the beginning of September, Lindsay. This might be something that hopefully doesn't happen, but could impact the beginning of next season.
Yeah, I mean, it's honestly, at this point, it's almost better for his body if you probably don't make the postseason so that he can get the rest that he needs to be healthy and pain-free before he starts an offseason throwing program. Flip side of this, San Diego Padres get Fernando Tatis back. He's been activated off the 60-day IL. Obviously, quite dynamic to that lineup, and I think we saw. They've won their last two games. Joe Musgrove had a great start over the weekend. Do you feel better about the Padres holding on to that final wild card or to that top wild card seed?
Yeah, I do. Especially after what we've seen from the Diamondbacks. The Braves have been kind of shaky. I feel the most confident of all the wild card teams right now. San Diego is the team that I've leaned towards, and you got to love what you're getting back from Tatis. Machado, I think, is not even living up to his expectations right now. If you can get him to get going, hopefully the reemergence of Tatis will help with that. And that's the crazy thing, Lindsay. I don't think this team is playing at their full potential. And it's right. And it's not an injury concern. It's a performance thing. And they're still the top wild card. So if they figure it out in this next month, I think this is one of those dark horse teams that could completely run the table of the National League.
Yeah, and because that bullpen is scary. We talked about this at the trade deadline. That bullpen is scary. They're five games back of LA. Feels like that's probably over, but definitely they are still in it. Another team that's still in it, the New York Mets. 7-3 in their last 10 games. They are half a game back of the Atlanta Braves for the final spot in the National League wild card. These two teams, the next to last series of the season for both teams is Braves versus Mets. I think that's going to be that. It feels as of right now, again, granted, coming off of Atlanta's loss over the weekend to the Phillies, coming off the fact that the only team who's won more than their last two games, who has a more than two game winning streak, is the Mets. They've won their last five. Feels like that series might decide the National League wild card, which is not a position we thought that either the Mets or the Braves would be in entering this season or even just a couple months ago.
Yeah, 100%. And if the Mets are still around at the end of the season to battle for that final wild card spot or wherever the case may be, then watch out for them, because according to Tankathon, they have the fourth hardest schedule for the rest of the season at a 531 strength of schedule. Only the San Francisco Giants, Colorado Rockies, and Tampa Bay Rays, all non-contenders right now, have a worse schedule. So out of all the teams battling for a final wild card spot or whatever, the Mets have the toughest schedule. Seven games left against the Philadelphia Phillies, three against the Brewers, three against the Braves, two against the Boston Red Sox, just to name a few. They got a couple other non-contenders in there, but that's a lot of teams going for a playoff spot to go against the Mets. So if the Mets stick around, it's because they're playing very good baseball, Lindsay.
Yeah, it's probably a team you don't really want to face right now, especially if they can line up the rotation to get both Severino and Manea in the same series. Right before we go, we didn't talk about him in the Brewers segment because I kind of wanted to keep the focus on Willy Adames because I think there's a lot of stuff to unpack there. But Jackson Chourio hits a grand slam in that game. And for a kid that doesn't turn 21 until March, I don't think people realize how good Jackson Chourio has been in the last 3 months. Okay. Batting average of .319, seventh best in baseball. On base, slugging .372, .542, 12th and 14th. So his OPS, .915, 12th best in all of baseball. 13 homers in that stretch, 13 stolen bases. He's driven in 50, and he struck out less than 16% of the time in the last 3 months. At the age of 20, if Jackson Chourio performs like this for an entire season, does it feel like he has a shot at a 40-40 year?
When you tell me those numbers, then you tell me he's only 20 years old, my mind immediately raced like Juan Soto. So you're telling me that like we're going to get kind of that kind of numbers, possibly?
I mean, the on-base is .372. It's not going a little crazy.
No, that's true.
But you're right. The whole point of being so good so young, I think, is the big takeaway there, right?
Right, good point.
Yeah.
I think there's no doubt that he's a 30-30 guy. 40-40, I think it's doable. I think it's absolutely doable. I think we can see 40 home runs from this guy, and he has the speed to do 40 stolen bases. So, yeah, count me in for at least two 40-40 seasons in his career.
Give me 2026, the Jackson Chourio 40-40 MVP caliber season. I'm calling it right now. I don't know if it'll happen in 25. It feels like you just need like that full season to make that dramatic cut down the strikeout rate like Ronald Acuña Jr. had last year. Not that 16% is bad, but give me 2026 on this.
20 years old is wild, though. 20 years
old. It is nuts. This has been First Pitch for Tuesday, September 3rd. Do us a favor. If you're listening on audio, leave us a 5-star review. Also go to the YouTube channel and subscribe to that. We had to create a new YouTube channel for this. The algorithm got a little confused, us doing two shows on the same thing. The other channel is now exclusively for our Braves Today podcast. If you're a fan of the Atlanta Braves, go check that out. That's going to be pretty much a daily podcast as well. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.